Listening Library presents A Clatter of Jars by Lisa Graff. Read for you by Ellen Archer. To Aria, a fizzy grape soda. Prologue. On the dark waters of Lake Atropos, just outside of Poughkeepsie, New York, there bobbed a single sailboat. At the boat's bow stood a black-haired pixie of a girl. Cadence, her name was. She and her parents were celebrating the one-year anniversary of her adoption. The sky was offering a dazzling farewell to the sun, a fiery orange nearest the water, edging into watermelon pink farther up. Then, at its height, a deep blackberry, and lily pads dotted the shore. Katie stared at the painted sky, passing an object between her hands. It was a glass jar, sample size, no larger than a ping-pong ball, with the words Darlington Peanut Butter embossed on the bottom. The jar was empty, save for the speck of light glowing at its center. Katie had seen the sight many times, and she never tired of it. The lower the sun dipped, the brighter the orb burned, dazzling yellow, like a firefly, smoldering purple at the extremities. The sphere always glowed brightest at the moment the sun set completely, then dulled to nothingness by morning. When she heard her mother approach from the stern, Katie tucked the jar away. "Toby and I were thinking of heading back to shore," her mother told her. Toby was Katie's father, had always been her father, although they'd only recently discovered each other. Katie fit with Toby as though he were the matching left mitten to her right. Katie had known her mother, Jennifer, much longer, although they'd only recently become family. Katie fit with Jennifer as though she were the right mitten to Katie's left. Somehow, though, Toby and Jennifer did not match each other, not in the slightest. Whether it was their stitching or the dye of their yarn, Katie's parents did not make a pair. Toby didn't seem to mind so much, being unmatched. But Jennifer... Sometimes Katie wondered if there wasn't another mitten out there somewhere for her mother. But whenever Katie broached the subject, Jennifer insisted she wasn't interested in mittens. In the past year, Katie had gained more family than she'd ever dared dream of. A mother, a father, and two grandparents, a grandmother who spoke in music instead of words, and a thieving grandfather who'd left Katie a peanut butter factory, her new home. Most times, Katie felt like the luckiest girl in the world. But sometimes, like when the sun blazed an orange watermelon blackberry trail across the lake, Katie dared dream for just a little bit more. An aunt, perhaps, or a brother, a sister even. It might be awfully nice to have a sister. "Two more minutes?" Katie asked her mother. "Two more minutes," Jennifer agreed, then returned to the stern of the boat. Alone once more, Katie took out her jar, examining it in the light of the setting sun. The glass glowed with possibility. A talent, that's what gave the jar its yellow-purple glow. A mysterious talent stolen by Katie's grandfather. A talent for acrobatics, perhaps, or for mending sweaters. It might allow Katie to translate Swahili, or train cats, or even turn raindrops into sparks of lightning. For a girl who just 1 year ago had lost all but a sliver of her own talent, those were great possibilities indeed. The only way to discover what lay inside the jar was to open it. Katie studied the horizon, letting the jar and its glow of possibility dangle over the sailboat's edge. Then, unclasping her hand, she let the jar fall. Plop. The jar hit the water and sank swiftly down. The things Katie dared dream of, she knew, couldn't be found in a jar. Only two living creatures knew which talent gave that jar its glow. The first was Katie's grandfather, Mason Darlington Burgess, who had eked the talent from a woman named Mavis Marvelous some 30 years previous. The second was a man who knew what was inside most everything. The woods of Camp Atropos for fair children, situated on the southernmost bank of the lake, were generally reserved for campers. The man in the gray suit was most certainly not a camper, and yet he stood watching the tide lap gently at the pebbly shore. He might have been 40, he might have been older. No one ever seemed able to tell for sure, and he was so large that his head had brushed several tree branches that were not used to being brushed. Bits of knotted rope peeked out from under his suit jacket, dancing with the summer breeze. Mason Darlington Burgess, the infamous eeker, had once tried to steal the man's talent for knot tying, trapping it in a jar, as he'd done with so many other talents. But as fate would have it, the talent had not remained trapped. At the man's foot squatted a frog, bright green on top and white at the throat, with bulby pads at the ends of his toes.
"Hadup, hadup,"
went the frog.
"The lake should be nice and warm this summer," the man said. "Prime opportunity for swimming."
Anyone who happened upon the scene would have sworn it was the frog the man was speaking to.
"Might be warm for at least 5 summers to come."
"Hadup, hadup,"
agreed the frog. The sky continued to darken. The frog remained still but for the occasional billowing of his throat, and the man in the gray suit watched the water, wearing the sort of sideways grin that suggested he knew more about the world than he was letting on. When the last rays of light sank below the water, the man left the shore and cut through the thicket of trees. The frog followed. When they reached a sturdy log building at the center of the camp, the man in the gray suit started up the steps.
"We ought to let her know," he said.
Together, the man and the frog entered the lodge, passing beneath a moose head keeping guard above the doorway. An office was tucked just to the left of the lodge's entrance, with a plaque on the door that read, "Camp Director." The man in the gray suit knocked.
"Ah, my new bread vendor."
The woman who tugged open the door had wild, curly black hair and creases around her mouth from years of frowning. She frowned now.
"I thought we scheduled the delivery for tomorrow."
"It's awfully buggy down at the lake,"
the man in the gray suit replied, which was no response at all.
"Especially at sunset. Too much brush, I suppose. Ought to be cleared up."
The woman patted the pocket of her knitted sweater.
"Is that a frog?"
she asked of the creature squatting in the doorway.
"Sunset," the man repeated. "Don't forget."
And then, without warning, the bright green frog with the white throat and the bulby pads at the ends of his toes leapt,
hadup, hadup,
directly at the woman, landing on her shoulder. Ignoring the camp director's squawk of surprise, the frog leapt again. The woman turned to follow the creature's path out the open window, but he was impossible to track in the dark night.
"Well, that was odd," the woman said.
But when she spun back to the doorway, the man in the gray suit had disappeared as well. As fate would have it, the small glass jar that read Darlington Peanut Butter did not sink to the bottom of the lake entirely undisturbed. Anyone who happened upon the scene, although of course no one would ever happen upon such a scene, not at the bottom of a lake, would have noticed that on its way down, the jar struck a large black stone. Just a titch, just enough. The stone dislodged the jar's lid. But of course, no one saw. 5 years later. Lily's Watermelon Limeade Float. A drink reminiscent of all the best birthday parties. For the watermelon limeade, 4 cups chopped watermelon from half of 1 small watermelon, 2 tablespoons lime juice from 1 lime, 1/2 cup sugar, 1 liter, 4 cups, seltzer. For the float, vanilla ice cream.
1. In a blender or food processor, blend...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?